Welcome to the Collector's Cast, where we talk all things collecting and collectible. With me, as always, is my co-host, Michael Blosky. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Clint.
I'm Clint the Collector, and today I think we're going to focus a little bit on auctions, which is a place that a lot of collectors find their items. And I know I do a fair bit of shopping there. Mike's shopped at auctions. We know a little bit about the subject. Later, we're going to have a guest who knows a lot more than we do. But I thought we'd mix things up a little bit today, Mike, and open up with our listener questions, since it does pertain to auctions in some way, I've been led to believe.
Well, here is our first question, and it is from Gordon Colson from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Saskatoon, you used to live there.
I used to live there. Hey, guys, love the show. I was wondering if you could possibly talk about collecting etiquette. I'm a little unsure of how I should act and behave with other collectors, especially at auctions. I tend to have to watch my behavior as it is. Okay.
Well, I can relate to this caller.
I drive the family nuts, he says. How do I create a rapport with other people of our noble hobby?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I haven't really put any thought or explanation into that yet on the show, but that's a very good point. Etiquette. It's really boils down to like anything in life. Whatever you're going to do, if you're going to go to an auction and start buying stuff, or if you're going to go to the store and buy groceries, there's always, you know, you gotta be a little bit polite, you gotta be a little bit personable, unless you want to be walking around like an a-hole and having everybody hate you. When it comes to collecting, though, there is a bit of a pecking order and a certain amount of posturing and kind of a. It's not official or anything, but it just sort of happens.
Yeah.
The old guys, my suggestion to, was his name Gordon?
Gordon.
Gordon, yep. When you go to an auction for the first time, just observe. Do what my dad used to tell me. Keep your eyes and your ears open and your mouth shut. I never listened to him all the time, but he used to always say it. And just absorb what you can. You're going to learn one thing. There is some big players usually in the room at these auctions. You got to give them a little bit of respect. If you go up to a guy who's been collecting and buying for 30 years and try to talk like a big shot, he's going to see through you in about 2 seconds and just go, what's this guy trying to be? So you want to be polite. You want to give the respect where the respect is due. These people that have been doing it for a long time can teach you a lot of things. So if you come in easy as their friend and get to know them and just remain humble and say, hey, you know, I like what you do. I'm interested in what you do. Most people like a polite person coming up to them and inquiring about their life and wondering it is how they do their livelihood. Because collectors are a bragging sort. We all like showing off our collections and talking about how great we scored the last deal. So it's not hard to get a conversation going with these guys. But yeah, do pay them some respect. Don't just jump in the auction like you know own the place and start putting up your hand and bossing people around and acting like you're going to buy everything in the room. You're not going to make very many friends off the bat. Anything you'd like to add to that, Michael?
I'm going to add this. Gordon, first, we all have to be ourselves at some point. And I look at it this way. I'm a competitive person. And And you are, in a way, in a bit of a competition with all these other collectors to get stuff, to know stuff. So I also, here's a little secret for you, a little tip. You know the old saying, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So
that's
just
true.
Yeah, tread softly. And hey, as time goes by, you'll get to know people, they'll get to know you. And hey, you're not going to like everybody. Everybody is not going to get along. But be yourself and remember, you're doing this because you love to do it. So have fun.
Remain honest. Remain true to yourself and to everybody around you. If you don't go in there bullshitting your way through life, people will take you at face value and hopefully accept you. And before you know it, you're part of the old boys club and you got the inside scoop on everything. So hopefully that's helpful.
All right. Hopefully that helps, Gord.
Yeah.
Thanks for your question.
Now, and That was the only one we were going to ask today, right? Because you said our first question is.
I just wanted to tell Gord, though, too. Oh. You're not limited to one question. You can send another question.
Whenever
you want.
Well, I think what we should do here is sit and stare at the cameras until Gord sends us another question. No, I'm kidding. Thank you very much, Gord. That's an excellent question. It's a good point. It's something I'd never thought about before, etiquette and auctions.
Take care and have fun.
Yeah, I remember actually going into an antique store too, etiquette in an antique store, one I've never been in before. And the guy kind of looked at me and, you know, I'm always, I never dress real conservative, you know. I'm usually in cowboy boots, and that day I happened to be in a buckskin tassel jacket, and I think a cowboy hat too. And he looked at me, what the hell is this guy dressed up to be? And I could tell I just rubbed him the wrong way. And he goes, what brings you in? I said, I'm just doing a little pick. And he goes, picking what? Picking a banjo? So I had to be diplomatic there. Otherwise, I wasn't going to make a friend. But I have my way of getting in with people and letting them know I'm not a threatening presence. I'm just another collector like they are and just want to play the game like everybody else. So I guess having covered that, I'm going to take that a little further, Mike, and go back to your professional hockey career, your sports career. And there must have been a certain etiquette in there, a hierarchy, right, in the dressing room with these guys. The guys that have all the experience, the veterans, you know, you got to pay them respect or you're never going to fit in. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can learn from – it doesn't matter what the – What you're involved in, you're going to learn from the people who have done it, been there before you, gone before you, and they've done things the right way. They've made the mistakes. I always used to say this. I would go to schools and places and give speeches on to young people on drinking and driving and drugs and stuff like that. And they'd say, well, have you ever tried it? Have you ever tried drugs? I'd say, no, I haven't. But also, I don't have to hold a gun to my head and pull the trigger to see what happens. I know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with, not the same thing, but with these people, when someone tells you something, hey, this, if you're collecting this, you have to watch for this.
Yeah.
Just take their advice. Take their advice. People like to give advice.
And with the hockey analogy, again, if you get some young rookie in who's maybe a little decent, had a tiny bit of success, and he starts acting like he owns the team and owns the dressing room.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'll get,
how far does that go?
Not very far. He usually gets put in his place quickly. And I think, you know, I always go back to this with, if you listen to people who've gone there before you, you're going to save yourself a lot of time, effort, and probably a lot of aggravation too.
Oh yeah, you know? For sure. Because it's not just about the general idea. It's all about the little steps between too that get you places. Yeah. So you're right. Listen to your elders. Listen to the experienced people of the world, whether it's collecting, playing a sport, doing whatever. Listen to the hierarchy. Listen to the experienced.
We've seen it in the collecting world where someone will come with deep pockets and they'll just try to throw a whole bunch of money at stuff. And they usually end up paying too much for stuff. They get stuck with a lot of stuff. And it's a hard way to learn easy lessons.
Yeah. I guess I'll go to one other store. I remember being at an auction once. And sometimes something they do in live auctions is if they'll have a bunch of a similar item up, and this happened to be signs. There were round tin signs about 2 feet in diameter. And I think there was around a dozen of them on the wall, and they were all gas and oil related, Shell, Golf, whatever. And I think there were some car ones, Chevrolet, Buick, whatever. They were like real man cave type signs, but they were all reproductions. So they were all worth maybe 50, 60 bucks a piece in a retail setting, you know, maybe slightly more in a where you got a rich market coming through. But they weren't worth much. And what they'll do on a multiple choice, you'll bid on the first one and they'll say, how many would you like? And so say you win the first one at 50 bucks. You could say, I'll take all of them, or I'll take the Buick and the Golf and the whatever. They call that choice. They let you have a choice. And this guy won the bids and he bid it up to $150 per sign You got to remember, there's fees on top of that, buying fees and tax. And when they said choice, he said, I'll take them all. So we just watched the guy buy at least 10, maybe a dozen signs, you know, for $1,500, $2,000, whatever it was, plus fees. And you got all the best collectors in the room, like all the veteran guys who've been doing it forever, going, looking at each other, shaking their heads, going, what the heck just happened? It'd be like some young rookie hockey player skating in and doing something just wacky on the ice. And everybody go, what the heck is with that guy? You know, and he didn't impress anybody because we just all thought he was stupid for paying too much. So, yeah, you can walk in and think you're going to own the room and, yeah, look at me, I just got all those guys. But meanwhile, they're thinking you're stupid. So, yeah, there's that.
I could tell you a funny story about that, about a hockey player. It was me.
Oh, then I definitely want to hear it.
All right. So I'm in Philadelphia. It's the first game I'm going to dress with the Flyers. And the guy in charge of the dressing room, our trainer, Dave, says, hey, we didn't even ask you. What number do you want to wear? Now, I was a goalie, right? And the legendary goalie of the Flyers is Bernie Parent, whose number had long since been retired. It was number one.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I don't know. I'll take number one if it's available. Everyone went silent, like silent. Everyone just looked at me. And the trainer goes, you're going to take number one? And he goes, are you sure? And then it clicked in my head. No. I go, what's available? He goes, you'll take 33. I said, 33 is fine.
It was a faux pas.
Yeah. Trust me, I didn't think I deserved to wear Bernie Parent's number.
No. You just weren't aware of that. It was.
I just wasn't thinking at the moment.
Excellent story. And you became much smarter afterwards, of course. Never made another mistake in your life past that. I think it's time now that we're going to take a little break, Mike, and we're going to come right back with our special guest. I can't wait for his answers to our multitude of questions. We'll be back with Kelly from Old Yell Auctions right after this.
See you soon.
And we're back. Welcome back to the Collector's Cast. We're talking about auctions today. I brought in a very special guest, a man whom I first met at an auction, actually, and he now runs and manages his own Old Yell Auctions. And without further ado, Mr. Kelly Ingram. Yay, Kelly Ingram's
here.
Hey,
good to have you, Kelly.
Thanks, guys.
So, auctions. I know you like them. I know you used to be a customer and a consigner, but what made you go into an auction business of your own?
Collecting. Hardcore collecting. I like buying, selling, always have. I collect quite a bit of stuff myself. A lot of stuff people don't probably realize that I do collect. But it's just the thrill of the chase of an auction. You know, you got to go out, you got to gather up the stuff, and then watching the fruits of your labor come to life, come auction day.
I guess, Kelly, it would be like sort of the ultimate do what you love, and it's not really work, eh?
It's absolutely true. I really don't feel like I've worked the last 10, 12 years.
I've seen you. Yeah. No, you work very hard. You're always giving her in there. And a lot of people don't realize this. Auctions, you know, you just, oh, great. They get money from the buyer. They get money from the seller. This is a license to print money. You got to move all that stuff physically, store it, handle it, not break it, not damage it. It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It absolutely is a lot of work. And it's 7 days a week because you're always working, you know, 2-3 auctions ahead of what's going on currently, and you got to juggle your time.
And be honest, being in that collecting world and market yourself, having a job that has to do with that market keeps you close to the product, so you probably do find stuff for your own self while working in that world, talking to other collectors. I mean.
For sure, and you know, I buy at other auctions as well. I'm always looking at other auctions, always buying. You know, I actually... I do collect quite a bit of stuff, and I collect Victorian stuff as well. But one of my favorite things that I collect, and it's not easy to find, I brought you a piece.
What do we have here?
We've got early Scrimshaw.
Oh, yeah. So, I was going to say, that looks like Scrimshaw even without my glasses.
Yeah, so I've been collecting this for quite a while. And
neat.
It's not easy to find. And I bought both of those pieces at another auction.
You know, now this is, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a whale tooth?
Yes, that's sperm whale.
Okay, and there's actually a picture of a sperm whale on it, and a tall ship in the background, actually two ships, there's one in the distance too. Some birds, that's just high quality work. And that's just scratching with a little tool.
Yeah, well, a lot of the sailors, it was, you know, they'd take remnants of the whale that they'd captured. Uh-huh. And it's not always their teeth. It could be part of cartilage. It could be part of the bone.
Especially the other one.
And they would sit there and, you know, while they're on the boats and...
Nothing but time.
Exactly. You know, and a lot of it was done for the tourist trade. You know, and, you know, it is legal to own the ivory as long as it's...
Teeth ivory, not, we're not talking tusk ivory, though.
No, but it is legal to possess it if it's 100 years old.
Oh, okay.
So it's not something that's illegal, and you can find it. And most of the auctions that do carry it, and that they vet their customers quite well.
But to clarify, tusk ivory from an elephant, can you own that?
No.
No, not at all.
No, it's got, I think you have to show the provenance of how old the tusk is and where it's come from.
Have a paperwork trail.
That's right. Right. And then there's always, in today's times, a lot of people look at it as kind of a moral issue of possessing that.
Yeah, you don't want to celebrate the
killing animals. So, Kelly, how old would these two pieces be?
These are not that old. They're probably, you know, 67 years old.
Still
they have a little bit of an age to them, but they're definitely more of a tourist trade type piece.
60s older than most of the people on this couch.
Yeah.
No, that's very cool. And would those, now you said sailors would make those. So do you know if these are traditional ones here or if is there First Nations art versus tourist trade stuff or diverse, you know? I was going to say that white people carved sailors, non...
Well, I think from my understanding, I've just been getting into this the last about 4 or 5 years, so I'm pretty novice at it. But for the most part, it's usually sailors, and they're carving what they're seeing day to day. It's second nature to them. Amazing. So
We're going to do a boat episode upcoming, too, and get into that. But this reminds me of going to the Vancouver Maritime Museum. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's down by the planetarium right on the water there. And they have the St. Rock inside, which was a ship that was used to go through the Northwest Passage. And it's an old RCMP ship. But one of the things I found amazing visiting that boat, and they must have had scrimshaw as well, but one thing that they did have that the sailors, we talk about a lot of time on their hands, is model boats they made out of their dinner bones. Those are incredible.
Right,
because it's that kind of detail as the carving, but it's also the carving itself of the bones and shaping and putting them together. It blew my mind. I went a couple of times. It just shows you time and energy and effort can make
it's skill. Anything. Unbelievable skill.
Mm-hmm.
Someone would have to carve that, eh?
Well, and they have the time.
Yeah,
they're stuck on a boat.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, going up and down the waves, I screwed that one up. Got to start another tooth.
Well, I wonder that, too, because I just remember, you know, growing up on the farm, you'd always have a pocket knife, and you'd get a stick, and you'd start whittling away, and you'd want to carve it. And I could never carve anything that looked like anything but a mistake, right? So they must have, like...
Well, I remember you made a pretty mean albino snake once. Carved all the bark off that stick.
Yeah.
No, that's very cool. I appreciate you bringing those. Now, you say you're a collector as well, Kelly. What got you into collecting before auctions? How old were you when you started?
Probably 11, 12 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
What got you into it?
My dad. I was the youngest of 9 living on a little hobby farm and wanted some stuff and wanted actually a little go-kart. And my dad said, I can't afford to buy you that. So we went to the barn and he got me to round up some stuff. And he actually took me to the armories here and set me up a little table to start selling to make my money myself to buy that go-kart. And
so you're like, 11, 12 years old, you had a flea market table?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah.
My dad put me in there and said, sell away. That's awesome. Teaching me how to make money and... Years later, my mom said, you created a monster.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, look at you.
Well, I have a question, Kelly, I want to ask you. And it's kind of a question and an opinion, I guess. How do you see now, especially after COVID? We've just all gone through and still going through COVID. The evolution of the auction, I would imagine, has gone from before people gathering in this spot, guy holding up the items and people bidding, to now I notice Clint and I have not been to an auction for a long time. They're online.
Oh, 100% it's changed. And, you know, from my point of view, it's some things have gotten a lot better, but we all miss that social interaction, the fun of going to the auction. What I find now is that the auction houses that I'm familiar with all across the country, we are putting in so much effort to make sure that the descriptions are as best as we can. We research the product even a little bit more than what we would have if it was live, and the pictures.
Yeah.
Because we want people to buy with confidence. So you have to put that extra effort in. And it's like Clint was saying before, I work, you know, we all work 7 days a week in this industry. You have to go above and beyond what you ever did before to build that trust with your customers.
So now that we're things have gone mainly online, and you can't just revert to the old, well, we had a preview day, you should have been there to see it, and tough luck if you didn't. I noticed the descriptions are getting better. Not that there's just a bunch of broken garbage in auctions, but when there is an issue with something, you know, chipped corner or a little corner of the glass is busted or whatever the issue is, they do describe it as best as they can. Because it used to be auctions were very localized. You'd go down in person to bid. You'd also go down the day or a couple days before to preview everything. You had to look at it really well because you can't complain after the fact and say, oh, I didn't see this. So I know certain auctions like Kelly's do a great job at describing the items accurately and also announcing if it's a reproduction or not. And that's very important too. If you don't read the descriptions properly, you can spend too much.
I guess still, and that with that said, there's still that social aspect of going to that auction. When I started going to auctions with Clint, I went to the second auction. The second time I went with him was because I said to him, are we going to the place where they have the chili? Where you can get a bowl of chili, really good bowl of chili. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, they have the chili there. Okay, I'll meet you there.
Right.
Yeah.
I just want to say one thing from the collecting aspect of it. I've been doing this for quite a number of years, and I never hesitate to phone another auction company and ask them about the product that I'm interested in. It doesn't matter how much knowledge you have. If you're starting to collect, look at myself, was starting to collect the Scrimshaw. It's a new field for me, and I never hesitate to ask those questions. And from the auction point of view, you have to do your due diligence. If there's something in your mind, by all means, phone the auction company. Mm-hmm. That's what we're here for. Is we can't put everything into those two or three line descriptions, but I will gladly answer any text or call about a piece of product.
Cool. I always feel like I'm bothering you and I don't want to bug you when you're working, but you know, in all fairness, if I can't get down there to look at the item, it's definitely helpful to have you guys be able to describe something over the phone, or you don't always get that one angle. You took two nice pictures, but for some reason I just can't see the the side or whatever. Yeah. No, it's very cool. Mike's right, though. We all miss the old social aspect of going down. And the live bidding, too. I know you guys do it audibly online, but not every place does. Sometimes it's just silent, and all you hear is the ding, ding, ding of the bidding button.
Right.
It feels very cold and impersonal compared to the old friendly auctioneer looking down at you. Hey there, I'll lend you $5.
I used to like when you're bidding against someone, and just to try to size them up. Have a look at the person, see what the expression is on their face. It's almost like you're playing poker.
That's right.
In some senses, eh, Cal?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're just like, okay. And even, I've been a couple of times where I've bought something, and then the person comes up and says, hey, I really want that. Can I buy it from you?
Yeah.
Right? You know, that's happened too. And people get gun shy, or They have, or like me, you bought it and you got buyer's remorse.
So, you should never be unhappy with what you bought. That's why, you know, review, ask questions, like Kelly says, do all you can to be sure before you buy it, because you shouldn't have buyer's remorse. You should have done enough research and that you're happy paying that amount of money. And that may also mean ignoring the ego and not going those extra few bids just to get a guy. It's funny, I was thought of something about live auctions too, about intimidating other buyers. You see, you're trying to size up other buyers. I've seen people that try to intimidate other buyers. Our good friend, old Greg, who he's an old biker guy, and he goes all head to toe in leather and keeps his sunglasses on. He stands there with his arms crossed, just scowling. And so when a guy starts bidding on him and he's bidding back, he'll stare at the guy and tell the guy, I don't think I want to bid against this guy anymore. And he claimed that I was doing the same thing. Oh, yeah, I see you're always dressed like a biker at these things to intimidate. I said, well, I'm just dressed the way I dress, but I guess if I intimidate others, it's a bonus? I don't want to intimidate anybody. I just want to get a good deal.
One other thing, Kelly, I wanted to ask you. You must get, I know you said being a collector, you must get stuff that comes into your auction. You got to put it up for bid, and you're sitting there going, oh, man, I would just love that thing. And you could probably talk to the person and say, hey, I'd like to buy this from you. But then you're sort of taking away from the
business,
from your auction, right?
100%. Like
from the prestige of your auction. Because Clint and I know it. We know that when we tune into your auction, that Kelly's going to have good stuff on there. And as that reputation goes out,
so you won't keep having nice stuff and you keep keeping it all for yourself.
That's right. Yeah. And it is. It's very hard because you see that piece that just like wows you and you want it. But, you know, you gotta stick it in, because that's why that customer's bringing it to you. And they're hoping that you're going to be honest and get them the most money and promote that product. So if you say, well, I want to keep that for myself, you're taken away from your business.
You have to fight that little bit of hoarder in every collector.
Yes, right? And that's why I go to a lot of other auctions, not just my own. I'm always at different auctions. There's three or four that I'm always on online here in the Valley and in Vancouver area, and I'm buying.
And you're sizing up the competition and getting little hints on the way they do things.
Well, we're learning as we go, and there's actually two or three of the auctions here in the Valley that know me quite well, and they know what I collect, and they'll let me know. We've got a couple of interesting pieces that we know you're going to like.
Oh, cool.
So,
yeah, I always like checking into yours. You always have great stuff. I guess there's another point you can make there, too, is when you're selling in an auction, knowing the right auction to go to, also with buying as well, you wouldn't take, say, a really nice collectible to an auction that just sells household goods.
Mostly. That's right.
Or you wouldn't take a box of dishes to a collectibles auction. Because there's nobody there really looking for that. And do you find that there's not a lot of cross-pollination for categories in auctions? Like, it's either you're a collectibles in general, or you're a this, or you're a car auction, or you're something. People specialize, right?
So you've got a wide range of product coming in from an estate, and you have to take it all.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll end up with one of the auctions that we just did. There is quite a bit wide variety of product that I usually wouldn't handle, but it's in the estate. And then there's also the times where people will bring me their stuff, and because I'm only about a year into it, but I have a lot of background in it, I have no problem advising somebody, you should consign it with this auction, because they will get you better money.
It'll do
and
better.
That gives me a lot more integrity. So when they're ready, they're ready to bring back, they're going to go, the guy was good to me and he pointed me in the right direction.
Yep.
How about this, guys? And then being auctions, you guys are both, Kelly, with the auction, you're both buyers and sellers of stuff, myself as well. Are you finding now, Kelly, that a lot of people are getting confused as to what is vintage and antique? And what is collectible and what's just junk?
Well, it's always been that old saying, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? So what you like, what I like, could be completely different. You know, vintage, antique, it's always been that debate. And it will vary from person to person, group to group, whether you're a sign collector or a glass collector. It all varies. Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, like on one of your previous episodes, you guys had mentioned reproduction signs. There is a big following for reproduction signs.
I'm one of them.
Well, you know, because it's a cost-effective way to do it, and it's also a great way to learn, you know, without overspending in your budget, and you get to buy that piece like you've done. And we go, well, I want to buy the sign. And it doesn't even have to be a sign. It could be, there's a lot of reproduction pottery and glass out there that is a great deal.
Your bonus is that you know a little bit about a lot of different categories. Like I get weird questions sometimes, and I ask you, like, those blue glass mannequin heads.
Right.
Things like that, that you know, are just like, I've never seen that. And you seem to have been around, and you see all the different things. But having that crossbreeding knowledge reminds me of one time I was at a collectibles only auction. And there was a stand-up bass guitar in there, which is not really in the collectible world. It's a total different thing. Musical instrument guys are musical instrument guys, and they're very knowledgeable in what they do. But this bass was just, nobody was there to look at that kind of stuff or to buy that. So I got it for, I think, $70, and it's worth a couple grand. So once in a while, you can find something that has no place being in that auction. And what that auctioneer or that auction house probably should have done, it wasn't ODL, it wasn't Kelly's, is maybe defer that customer to a different, to an auction that handles musical gear, so they would have got top dollar for that item. And it turned into a win for me. So on that note, we love having you here today. Old Yale Auctions, remember the name, Kelly Ingram, he's the auction man. And when we get back from our short break, we're going to do a little trivia that has to do with auctions. Kelly, would you mind sticking around for that?
Absolutely love to.
There you go. We'll see you guys in a few minutes. And welcome back to the Collector's Cast. We're here with Mike Blosky, my co-host as always, and special guest Kelly Ingram of Old Yale Auctions. We're just about to do a little trivia, and since the trivia is auction themed today, thought I'd ask Kelly to stick around and help us out answering a couple questions. So Mike, why don't you read your trivia question first?
All right,
never heard this.
It's an easy one. So the most expensive vintage motorcycle to sell at auction.
The most expensive vintage motorcycle. And I think I know this maybe.
I'm going to give you the multiple choice.
Oh, yeah, multiple choice. Okay.
Do you want the multiple choice and the price? You want to have there be two answers?
No, just give us the multiple choice and then we'll unveil the number after.
A Vincent Black Shadow that set the world land speed record, 1951. Vincent Black Shadow.
Very decent.
A 1969 Honda CB250. I'm
trying to think what that would have been used in.
Or 1914 Harley Davidson board track racer.
I'm surprised you didn't say a 68 Triumph, because just the other week, Fonzie's bike was auctioned off.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Triumph, which was around a late 60s Triumph Bonneville. And I think Richard Rollins from Gas Monkey Garage bought it for, I heard a big number, like 270 something, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars he paid for Fonzie's bike. So I don't know, Kelly, do you want to take a stab first?
I don't know bikes that well, but I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say it's the Honda CB250.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what would make a Honda CB250 worth so much. Maybe if it was ridden by somebody famous or owned by somebody famous. You know, of the three value, definitely the board tracker, the 14 Harley, was it? And the Vincent Black Shadow. I'm going to say the Vincent Black Shadow is the most valuable in just a regular setting. So that's what I'm going to go with in the auction.
It was the 1951 Vincent Black Shadow, ridden by Australian Jack Arrett, and he set the world land speed record with that particular bike, and it sold for $929,000.
Nice.
Now, Vincent Black Shadow is an expensive and rare bike to begin with, but it's obviously its prestige or its connection to the land speed record. Yeah.
In 1951, there was only 30.
Oh, wow.
Black Shadows built.
Okay. So. Ah, very interesting. I did not know that, Ed. I did not know that.
Very rare.
So I'm going to move on to my auction question here, and this is more to do with auctions themselves. How long ago was the first auction generally accepted that the first auction took place? Was it A, 200 years ago, which would be the 1800s, B, 500 years ago, which would be the 1500s, or C, 2500 years ago, which would be 500 BC? So that's your three options. When would it be generally accepted that the first auction took place?
Go ahead, Kelly.
Go ahead and sound your thoughts.
Well, so the options again were the choices?
1800s, 1500s, 500 BC.
I go with the 1500s.
What do you think they would have been selling back then?
Tulips.
You know what? That's a damn good guess, because Dutch auctions, which Kelly makes a very good point, Dutch auctions, which run backwards, started as tulip auctions. That's a whole different story. They start with a high number and they work down to a low number. I don't know exactly how it works, but that's the story. The answer, Mike, did you want to take a shot?
I'm going to say 500 BC.
I got to tell you, the guy that owns the auction is not the expert today.
No.
Mike's right. 2,500 years ago in ancient Greece, Babylon to be precise, women were sold on the condition of marriage. So it wasn't a slavery thing. It was they were sold to the highest young eligible bachelor was willing to pay. So I read about it last night. It was quite interesting. They all would fight over the best looking girls, and the ones that were the least attractive would actually end up paying a dowry to just get in the auction. So some of them sold at a negative number. But yeah, 500 BC, 2500 years ago, they were auctioning people, not like slavery, which did take place. There was a lot of slavery auctions over the history of time. A horrible, disgusting practice. But this was more of a lining up marriages and weddings. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I've never bid on a wife before. That'd be something to check out if they did that nowadays. I'm not sure.
I think we should just stay away from that subject.
Yeah, you're probably right. There you have some trivia. I'm going to thank the guests for tuning in, the listeners. I'm going to thank the guests that came and sat on our couch, Kelly Ingram from Old Yellow Auctions once again. And we hope you've had a lovely time here. Thank you very much. Good day to all.
See you again.
Thanks for having me.